It is August 18th, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time for Geek Speak, and Geek Speak on KSP is supported by eConstruction, a Santa Cruz-based sustainable builder offering design, planning, and construction services for 15 years. EcoStruction evaluates every site and project based on location, climate, function, and client desire. Past project photos are at EcoStruction.com. We're also supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish and using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. Information is at RamirezDDS.com. As I said before, it is August 18th, 2020, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. This is KOSP 2020? Oh, it's not 2020, is it, Ben?
Yeah, you said 2020.
Well, you know, you didn't have the document ready. I can't read it.
It's just, I did have the document ready.
Yeah, but it wasn't
open to it. I just messaged
it
to you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. This is too meta.
What do you mean by meta?
This is, we're talking about the show on the show.
Oh, I see. That would.
But
do
now
it.
We're talking about the show.
Well, let me do this. Let me do this because it's always a nice thing to do. In the air room with me is Mr. Ben Jaffe. He's a freelance media guy and instructor. And you just finished a week long or 2 weeks of instructing.
I just finished 7 weeks of instructing with Digital Media Academy.
That's why we haven't seen this, Ben.
I am so tired.
Ben, what are you teaching? Well, hang on. Miles Elam's also here. He's a programmer, a political junkie. Hi.
Hi.
So let's, Ben, what do you do when you're teaching? You teach for, what's the name of that company?
Digital Media Academy.
Digital Media Academy. Mm-hmm. And what do you do? What ages do you teach?
Well, this summer, actually, typically I teach pretty much every age that DMA offers. I teach the Adventures program, which is 9 to 12 or 8 to 12 maybe, teenagers and then adults as well. And this summer I was teaching Adobe After Effects quite a bit. I taught an intro to game design for the kids 1 week, and I also taught Adobe After Effects, which is a fantastic program for video compositing. And you can do all kinds of fun visual effects with it. When I was teaching all the teens After Effects, all they wanted to do was add explosions to everything, just constantly.
All right.
I ran into that same problem when I was teaching for DMA. All the kids were like, I want to blow this up. I want to have a bigger explosion.
You're actually, like, I just have to share this.
How do you implement explosions?
You take a video of an explosion. And you put it on top of the video of the original footage. I mean, it's more complex than that. If it's a handheld shot or if the shot is moving, you motion track it to get the explosion to look right. You maybe change the transfer composite mode to make it blend in with the scene. Maybe you add two versions of the explosion, one behind a green screened person and one in front of, and that way you can put the person inside of the explosion. The video that they made this week, one of the groups in my class made this week, was called The Michael Bay Touch. And for those of you who don't know, Michael Bay is a director who is well known. He did Transformers. He's well known for adding explosions to everything. So they did The Michael Bay Touch. So Michael Bay comes out at the beginning of the video and shakes some guy's hand, and now that guy has the Michael Bay touch. So his phone rings, he touches his phone, it blows up. He plays tag, he tags someone, they blow up. He touches the ground, the earth blows up. And that was it. It was kind of fantastic, actually. Really neat idea.
I'm glad you're doing it. I love geeks that spread the word, and thank you for doing that.
It's mm-hmm. awesome. Yeah.
One thing you're not doing, though, is unfortunately sharing the document with me.
I did. I messaged
Google
it
Docs,
to you.
Oh, you messaged it
yes,
to me.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I messaged it to you before you started the show.
I see you going there, but it's just not happening to me.
You know what I
think that,
you know,
I need to make
about
the Google Doc.
What I wonder about?
How bad the show is?
Yeah, how bad the radio is when we start talking about our own tech support problem. I do the same thing myself, too.
It's frustrating, isn't it?
Lyle, it's in your inbox.
Yeah, I see it now.
Aha.
So Google Docs is not sharing effectively, even though we do sharing, unless we send the documents. So every week...
It's simpler than that, actually. So when we originally created the document, I think Miles created the document, and that's why he shared it to everyone but me initially. So everyone but me is an initial collaborator.
No, but Ben, you don't seem to understand. You don't seem to understand. It didn't get shared to my Google Drive.
No, but this is the new, I just made a new doc, completely new doc. Before,
right.
So let
Which
me explain
also
for the
didn't
listeners.
Show up in the share. You know what? Let's do this conversation offline. It's
okay.
Fascinating to me, but totally horrible radio, I think. and I didn't ever say that GeekSpeak is bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Miles, first geek news item, sir.
Yes, this one is about a group of researchers that are playing around with genetics. When I mean by playing around with genetics, I really mean they're playing around with the DNA molecule. And what they have done, because DNA is just such a compact storage medium.
Yeah.
Far more compact than just about everything that we have in terms of like hard drives and SSDs. And so they're using DNA to hold data. And what they've done is...
My body does that.
Yeah. Sorry. What they've done is they stored an entire genetics textbook in less than a picogram of data. 1/1,000,000,000th of a gram.
Okay, so... Now, sometimes I feel like that the whole creating, you know, genomes by scratch, like basically building up little genetic code samples, is science fiction. And sometimes I know that it's real, but it is real. We're actually able to do that. We're actually able to build. You can actually encode data into DNA just directly.
Well, the thing is, the difference between this and most DNA is that when they're making it reflect a textbook, they don't have to worry about the viability of that.
Right.
Of that DNA. The DNA doesn't have to replicate and make new protein structures and
can you read from it?
Well, yeah, that's how they verified that they were able to
that's
put
awesome.
The data in.
So they're
in,
able to put a whole textbook on genetics into a genome and then read it back out.
Right.
And now, how big was this? A picodot?
A picogram.
Picogram.
That's one picogram for a textbook. And that's by small. The way, to get around the issues of it reproducing and all of that stuff and mutating, they've created chemically synthesized DNA on a little glass chip. That's how they actually got around that. Although I do think it's kind of a neat idea to you know, let's say put a textbook on a picogram of DNA, not chemically synthesized, and then have it mutate and give different students different mutations of the textbook.
And for the audience out there, instead of just saying
too,
how small a picogram is, let's just talk about the metric system, which is you have a decigram, a centigram, a milligram, microgram, nanogram, picogram.
And every time you do that, it's a 10 times smaller?
One tenth, yeah. So it's a trillionth of a gram.
That's really small.
Yeah. And another fact about the story.
Oh, wait, then I got that wrong then.
You did.
Because nanogram is only 1/1,000,000th. So,
well,
what am I missing?
A milligram of the molecule could encode the entire text, the complete text of every single book in the Library of Congress.
Wow.
And a lot more than that.
So how effective is this reading and storage medium? Are we going to see this on our cell phones soon? Or do you have to have like a giant room of equipment to do this?
Big room. Very, very big room. A lot of expensive equipment. Not at all viable currently.
Miles, thanks for the story. You're looking up the numbers I can see. Did you
yes,
it out?
Nano is actually 1/1,000,000,000th. So picogram is 1/1,000,000,000th. I was
1/1,000,000,000th.
Just wrong about that. Okay.
You know, it's funny because we talk about, 1/1,000,000,000th. Oh, 1/1,000,000,000th. Oh, that's a lot more. Well, our brains aren't really functioning at the level to understand those things, right? Mm-hmm. We don't actually get the size.
Right, the fact
of those
that
things.
We say a gram, in other words, a cubic centimeter of water, which is what a gram
which
equates to.
Weighs a gram, right? And a centimeter is about half a
right.
fingernail size.
The reason that we have gram as a base model is because that's the unit that most appeals to us on our scale.
Right.
If we were microscopic scale, we would start with picogram and then move up from there.
Right. Right.
Yeah, the system, the naming itself is
based
from
on
our own
human experience.
Yeah, it's based upon our
I
own
I love
perceptions.
How the metric system is based off of water, our very common and very necessary
or
that's
what it
thing.
Used to be. I think it may be a little bit off for the official
but in the
gram.
Sense,
but
in
yeah.
the sense that, you know, the all of the measurements you can use as a water, you know, if you want to raise 1 gram of water, 1 degree Celsius, you use 1 calorie. Like, it's like really
right,
kind of
right.
cool mm-hmm. to be able to do that. But let's move on, Ben.
Oh, I just want to say about scale really briefly. At least speaking for myself, I can say I have no conception, even though I deal with computers, read these stories all the time, no conception of what a trillion is, no conception of what 1,000,000 is. I have no idea what 1,000 is. I have no idea of what 100 is. Like, I can't even, like, really fundamentally understand 1,000 M&Ms. I can't picture that really. Like, I can imagine how much space that would take.
Right.
But how many M&Ms
do it
that is?
Classification. Oh, I see.
So, so what I'm saying is, our ability to intuitively understand numbers is severely limited, way more limited than what we can count or whatever. And we have language and mathematics to allow us to communicate these numbers. We've got the logarithmic scale, and we can understand that maybe for a teeny fraction of the graph. And then it just, again, goes outside of our ability to comprehend, because we're not evolutionarily predisposed to understand these things at all. Like, our brains just can't do it.
Yeah,
and that's why we have science, and that's why we have math, and that's why understanding math is important. Even if you don't use it, you know, use calculus or whatever, strictly speaking, having some kind of experience with it at least allows you to comprehend things that are completely out of your ability to intuitively understand.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. This is why astrophysicists use light years as a unit of distance, even though it's so much further than any of us will travel in our lifetimes.
Yeah. So if you say, oh yeah, there's the star, it's 1,000 light years away, or in a parallel universe, you say, oh, there's this star, it's 12 light years away, I'll probably think of them as about the same distance away. Even though, because a light year is just so far, one light year doesn't make sense to me. If you say 100 million miles away, I might think of that as further away than 100 light years. It's just like, again, our brains have no ability to understand.
You know what I find fascinating is when you talk about large numbers and you try to assess whether you have a good understanding of them. I could say right now to you guys that in the United States, the amount of people that eat toast, if you take all the crumbs in one year from everybody in the United States, that's 4 metric tons. Now, I just completely made all that up, right? But okay, that might be possible. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, there's no way to assess, well, how many people eat toast and how much does a crumb weigh and mm-hmm. how much do people lose crumb? Like, it's not, you can't really do it without building a whole math structure in there to help mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
I'm ready to. But I mean, that was a pretty cool topic.
Awesome. I think it's your turn, Ben.
Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah, because that was actually miles.
Check it out. All right. This is so cool. I'll just say that to begin with. MIT has developed these things called micro thrusters. And anyone of you want to guess how big they are? A micro thruster. This is something that
I would assume that it's a micro centimeter in length.
So if you
micro centimeter?
I don't know. A micro micrometer, excuse me.
It's one grain of sand. No. No. So just to give you context before you guess, this is a thruster that will be put on satellites that can actually move satellites.
Oh, okay.
Right? Small satellites.
Okay,
very small satellites.
Right.
But
what's the thrust?
Well, first I'll tell you the size. It's 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter and 2 millimeters thick.
What? So like a dime.
It's a dime. Yeah. It's like a postage stamp.
What causes its thrust capability?
Capillary action, stuff like that. So basically, stuff and things. No. Okay, I'll explain. So we're talking about satellites that are like 2 pounds, like a Rubik's Cube satellite, right? You put it up there, it does some...
Are there things like that?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah, we've got
cool.
Like, I don't know, several dozen, I think.
Okay.
Up there. So the way the microthruster works, and by the way, you would use multiple of these in order to change position, attitude, maybe pitch or roll it or whatever. And it adds very, very little to that overall weight. Before, when we send up satellites, the propulsion system would be pretty darn big and you wouldn't have very much room for
the reason why this is exciting to me is that it sounds so one of the things with thrust when you have no atmosphere is you actually have to throw something away from you. So to change your main body's movement in any way, you have to throw, except for rotation, have to throw something away from you at high velocity, and that equal and opposite force allows you to move. So this thing has to be pushing something.
Ions. Yeah, it's doing it with ions. But basically what it is you've got a whole bunch of different layers of metal, and this metal is porous. So it has these little holes in it. And, as you go from layer to layer, the holes get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Cool.
And so it sucks up the liquid through capillary action up to the top where you have the little tips, right? And then, it zaps that and creates a charge difference, which
what's
spurts
the
out the ion. And the ion, it's a liquid plasma of free-floating ions.
Okay, so it's
It's just liquid ions that are just chilling, you know?
It's plasma. It's plasma. I wouldn't say liquid because
it's plasma ion. Okay, yeah, sure, yeah.
So excited electrons to the state at which you, excited atoms to the state at which you get to plasma.
Yeah, yeah. And cool. If you want an analogy, the way a tree works is very similar. You know, trees use capillary action to pull the water. They don't have little pumps or anything like that inside. They use capillary action and the water just kind of goes up into the tree.
Which limits the size of the tree.
Which limits the ultimate height of
the tree. And the reason why redwoods are so large is because we have a fog layer coming in so that the trees don't have to pull up from their roots. They can pull it up from the various branches.
I didn't know that.
Well, wait a second. You guys just mixed two different things. One, you're talking about atmospheric
he was talking about redwoods.
Right. Yeah. But capillary action,
you get an upper bound.
You're saying that you're an upper bound of how small the capillary can be to the water being lifted based off of the gravity.
Which gives you
that's the balance you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. And I always talked about it and talk about it as capillary action, but in general, atmospheric pressure can only push something up a certain height. That's kind of what you're referring to, right, Miles?
There's atmospheric pressure, but you're also inside the trees. Things are a little.
Well, but the thing is, you're saying is that you have to have a fog layer to actually give it enough water.
At higher levels, yeah. Right. So that you basically have a multiple, what amount to root structures going up. Each time it's going up.
So you want to know how much force?
Yes.
50 micronewtons. So a very, very small.
So Newton, one Newton is, what is it?
It's the force of the apple on Newton's head? No, I'm kidding. No,
it's moving 1 gram, accelerating 1 gram, 1 meter.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Accelerating a gram a meter per second.
If you had,
I think is a Newton.
If you had a completely still room with no moving atmosphere or air, no moving air or anything like that, 50 micronewtons of force would suspend a small shred of paper in the air. So it's a very, very small amount by our standards. But when you're talking about a zero gravity environment and a satellite, it's only a couple pounds. It's all you need. Yeah. Exactly. Plus also in space, we tend to do things relatively slowly anyway. If anyone's ever watched a video of when
7 hour video of
the shuttle, the shuttle went up to the ISS many, many months ago and it did a little backflip so they could check the heat shield and everything. It took like 20 hours.
You know, it's so great. At one point you sent me, like, isn't this awesome? This is so exciting.
And you're like, it's not moving.
And it's a 20 minute long video of a docking procedure. I'm like, yeah, that's exciting.
In a
non-temporal way. Thank you, Ben, for that story on micro thrusters.
You got to find the time lapses, right? Otherwise, you waste all your time.
Miles. Actually, you know what? I'll take a second and mention what I've been doing. Little website update, but also about coding. I've been using Vim. I've tried to move over to Vim instead of a TextMate, which is what I've been using. Ben, you're using Sublime.
I just changed from TextMate to Sublime. I'm not because I dislike TextMate, just because there were a couple features I loved in Sublime.
Yeah, and I've liked TextMate for years. Yeah. I'm really happy.
They're
with
both
it.
Great.
We're talking about text editors. We use them for programming, coding. All three of us are programmers. Miles, what do you use?
It depends on whether I'm on Windows or Mac. On Mac, I guess I use either NetBeans for full development or Text Wrangler.
Text Wrangler.
Text Wrangler is great because it's free.
On a Windows box?
On a Windows box, if I need a full IDE, I'm using NetBeans. Right. If I need just a text editor, I use Notepad++.
Yeah, good app. So I've switched to Vim, and Vim is a command line text editor completely. It's in almost every Unix environment, including OS X. You have a copy of it on your terminal. If you open up terminal and you type VI, you will actually get into the Vim application or Vim.
Which actually isn't VI, it's VI Improved, which is where Vim comes from. It's VI Improved.
It's the Unix name. I've always switched over to that when I needed to edit something on a server. So I have some capable rudimentary, you know, I can get to the beginning of the line, the beginning of the file, find things of that nature, and replace and remove and get into insert mode and append things. Like, all those things are something you need to be able to do in a text editor. You don't use a mouse at all for this. And one of the things that I've always worked on, as Ben does as well, is to limit the mouse use. We learn shortcuts. And the reason for that is moving your hand over to a mouse and using the mouse is actually not very good for your wrists over long term. And when you're a programmer, you're doing it all the time, you actually really need to minimize that movement. Keep your hands in a very comfortable space. So I keep my fingers on the home row of the keyboard, and Vim allows you to do that very effectively, navigating everything with the home row only. So this is not something you want to take lightly. It's a big muscle training exercise to get your brain and body to work so that you're moving and navigating with GH, J, and K. So once you start doing that, by the way, I'm using TMUX, which is a multiplexer in the environment. in Unix and shell environment. And with tmux, you can actually share your tmux experience with somebody else. So pair programming is very common to do this kind of thing. But the big reason I switched to all this, to say that, is that I recently from Al got a keyboard for my iPad, right? So it's a Bluetooth keyboard.
Oh, I wish you guys had been here because when...
Oh, my machine just went bum dun.
When he said, I just got a keyboard for my iPad, he pulled it out like a magician. Oh, wow, it's an iPad.
So what I've been doing, I've got a little virtual machine up in the cloud, Ubuntu. It's one of our servers for GeekSpeak. And I've been coding everything there using an SSH client on my iPad.
Really? So you're coding on an iPad?
I'm coding on an iPad. It's kind of cool. It's a little frustrating. Some of the copying and pasting stuff's difficult. I'm also migrating between my laptop and both. Mm. But because I'm doing that, I'm getting more used to using VI commands. And the thing that I wanted to mention... is this little thing called Vimium. It's a Chrome plugin, Vimium, and gives you VI commands for navigating web pages.
Really?
It's geeky and totally fun. So that's what I'm using for browser navigation. Should we move on to something? Do you have any questions?
You guys can't see this, but I'm looking with a whole sense of general disdain about all of this.
Why?
Yes, I know how to use VI, but... That whole idea of like, yes, the best way to navigate around is F, G, H, and J.
I wouldn't say it's the best way to navigate. I'm saying that once you train your muscles to do it, mm-hmm. it's very effective and fast. I don't have to move my hand off the home row.
Yeah, it's like JKL for the video editors.
Do you use JK and L for video editing?
Yeah, J goes backwards, L goes forwards, K stops, and you can hit L multiple times to go forward really fast. And
that's
back.
Wrong compared to what Vim does.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the problem, of course, with this kind of things. Once you learn this kind of complex key structure, it really is something that you are kind of stuck in.
It becomes a tool that your hand is attached to. Yeah. It's like using a hammer, but you're using a keyboard, and
right.
I don't know, it's difficult to explain.
It's like a tool that was invented or created 30 years ago, and you just aren't willing to let it go.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a good point.
Keep in mind, I mean, I've been using like TextMate, right? And in TextMate, when you're selecting text and moving around, I'm still using the keyboard most of the time.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
It's just how you do it. You jump through the line, you jump along words. Mm-hmm. And though the key commands are slightly different, using the arrow keys a lot more in that environment. I've got to move my hand over to the arrow keys, and that switch of the wrist is actually less comfortable over time.
Hmm.
Anyway, so you're not buying it,
Miles. I would believe it more if I saw some stats that said that VI users
had fewer
RSI injuries than say, a lawyer or a secretary who is also typing all day long. And
The thing about programming versus typing all day long when you're a secretary or you're a lawyer or something is that that's the best thing you got for typers all day long, writers, let's say, is that it's not common for you to be moving around a lot in the text and inserting characters and doing strategic. Mm-hmm. In programming, you're constantly, unless you're one of the savant people that has the program in their brain, they're just spitting it out to the keyboard, you are testing and moving and adding, a variable name. You're jumping all over the place.
I think you... maybe miscategorizing how lawyers and secretaries
it's possible.
Deal with their,
I'm not,
their issues.
Lawyer.
Just because I know from the secretaries that I've known how much moving around and how much like this over here and this embedded in over here. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the lawyer where I've long said and quoted the statement, lawyers were the first programmers. The law is... take this chunk, make sure it fits over here.
Yeah,
does this fit better up here? Let me change the wording on that.
I find that insulting, but I totally agree with what you said.
Oh, no. Maybe lawyers would feel that way, too.
I didn't say that all lawyers are good programmers.
Valid. Depends on what kind of laws they make, I guess.
If you like keyboard shortcuts, you can go on Twitter and go to twitter.com/command-tab.
Hey, that's
a project I did. I haven't updated it for 2 years, but for a while it was a tri-weekly update of Mac OS X keyboard shortcuts. Most of them are still applicable. Yeah. And I was thinking, you've commented on how many keyboard shortcuts I use all the time.
Right.
And so I just tried to go through my brain and all the tasks I do and write down all the keyboard shortcuts I ever use.
Here's the thing.
That
if
help
you,
me.
If you are selecting text on your screen and then going up to edit menu item and coming down to copy and then going placing where you want to go and going doing that again and down to paste, you're doing a lot of movement with your hand.
You're going to,
And there are simple, the copy and paste command is actually one of those universal in a lot of sense. And it's very easy to do. On the Mac, it's the command key, the cloverleaf key plus C or V for paste, which Y, who knows? Copy.
It's right next to it, probably.
Yeah, probably is Y.
Yeah, command C, command V, and on Windows.
And you should go ahead and teach yourself a few of those. Most applications actually show you what the command key sequence is in the menu items.
And that's one of the grumbles I have about VI and Emacs is the fact that nowadays every text editor on every platform is control C, control V, control X for cut, control Q for close, and not VI or Emacs.
Right.
And they came first, and they had their own way of doing things. But, I mean, how many people out there know that if you want to cut three lines,
it's DD or 3DD.
Yeah. And then you want to paste it back in your P. Okay, that's better, I guess. But
just to clarify, on the Mac, it's Command X for cut, Command C and Command V for copy and paste. On Windows and Linux, it's Control.
But the
X,
key
C,
is
and
the same
V.
Location.
Right.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No.
It's left of the spacebar or right of the spacebar.
No, Alt is. And then Control is to the left of that.
No.
All right.
Yeah, he's right. At the same time,
Oh my God, look at that. Here it is. Here's a Windows keyboard.
It's funny. You looked for a Windows keyboard. I opened up Google Image Search.
Well, I'm sitting around Windows machines, so it's easy over here. Should we move on to like the show stuff? In fact, I should probably mention that GeekSpeak on let's do the middle of the show
La-di-da-di-da.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell, and the air with me is Ben Jaffe and Miles Elam. We are going to take calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. I'll do that slow in a second. If you caught it fast, you'll get in line the queue quicker. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by AFS, welcoming students from 90 countries to live with host families while attending high school in Central California. Information about becoming a host family and public diplomacy initiative details at afsusa.org. I'm going to repeat that, afsusa.org. We're also supported by Cruise.io Works. They offer rentable workspaces located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz, featuring 40 new private offices, meeting rooms, an organic cafe, and 100 megabits per second Wi-Fi. More information is at cruiseio.com/cruiseioworks or at 459-6301. As I said, in the air room with me is Ben and Miles. I'm Lyle Troxell. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, I'm going to get the phone number again, and I will do it slow the last time. But first, some geek bits. Mine was about Vim and Vimium, the Chrome browser. Ben, yours?
No, mine is a comment. So Alex, our Southern California correspondent geek, hopped into our Google Doc and wrote, "Text Editor Talk has to be one of the geekiest shows I've heard in a while." So I agree with him. It's a little difficult to talk about on the air.
On the bright side, at least we're not arguing between VI and Emacs. That is the quintessential flame war.
Emacs all the way now.
I don't know if it's even an argument anymore. I think everybody understands that that's a stupid argument to get into.
No, they don't. Oh, I hear people get into it all the time.
I want to argue with you about whether people argue about VI and Emacs.
Oh, man. And I'll argue with you guys about whether we should have that argument.
Okay, go.
Yes, and that is... color printing, we're done. It's over. The ultimate resolution has been reached.
Okay.
And
are you gonna say pico or something?
No.
He's gonna say femta.
100,000 dots per inch. And the reason
How
why
much?
This is the 100,000 dots per inch.
And it's like putting down molecules.
Yeah, inkjet and laser printers out there max out at 10,000 dots
maybe,
per inch,
yeah.
And then
consumer
most
line
of them,
1,200.
Yeah, most of them are 1,200. And
this is 100,000 dots every inch.
And the reason why this is the ultimate is once again we talk about how it reflects with humanity. Like gram is only important because it fits our scale. People with perfect vision cannot discern objects smaller than 20 to 30 micrometers. And this makes color dots that are at that scale.
Okay.
And therefore, you could make printers that were more, that had a more precise,
But only hummingbirds would care.
I don't know. Hummingbirds have.
I just made up a bird that might have good
eyes.
You
might only care if you were printing out something and then you wanted to blow up that print, like take the picture of that printing and blow it up to a larger size, then you could, but at the same time.
Okay, how long does it take to print? And is this printer a consumer product or a test product?
This is a test product.
Okay.
This is in the lab.
It's awesome. And is it inkjet?
I want to say yes, but I'm not sure.
All right. Ben, do you have something to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, never mind. It doesn't. It was one of those in the moment comments, and now the context is lost.
That's our end of our geek bits, and I'm Lyle, and Ben and Miles are also in the airman. We're taking calls. Oh, Ben, you've got.
I do have a geek bit.
Let me get the phone number nice and slow.
Yeah,
the phone number to call in and ask us questions about anything you'd like, and you really can ask us anything. We'll take tech calls till the cows come home, or till the robots come home. I guess that's better.
But the cows gone?
Yeah, the robots are. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 800-655-5877.
So this from the article on Nature, just to just finish up here, just because you asked that question of what type of printer it is, I'm just going to quote here from Nature. For the initial demonstration of the Lena image, the researchers first used electron beam lithography to pattern a silicon wafer with an array of posts made from an insulating material. Then they deposited metal nanodiscs on the post and coated the wafer's surface with metal. The metal coating on the wafer reflects the colored light from the pillars, making the image bright. The colors appeared all at once after we applied the metal, says Yang.
Wait. So it's a chip? They're printing? That's not paper.
It's not paper.
I was going to bring up the whole, how big is paper pores? I mean, aren't they too small? I mean, too big for that eye? Okay, that's cool. So it's basically look down
so
at a wafer.
Is it an inkjet printer? No. Is it a laser printer? No.
No.
Because x-ray lithography doesn't, or it's not
it's
x-ray
a chip manufacturing methodology.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Electron beam lithography.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I have a really quick geek bit.
Wait a second. We've been doing silk screen. We've been doing masking on chips that size for a long time.
But this is
oh, but
color,
it's color
printing. Yeah,
that's
right.
color. Thank you. Mm-hmm, thank you very much. All right, go on.
So this is the Mars Curiosity rover landed on the 5th or something like that,
awesome.
Almost 2 weeks ago. Fantastic images coming back and everything, but this is the one I'm really excited about.
Wait a second. A rover landed on Mars?
You should listen to Geek Speak.
We didn't cover it before the show.
Okay, so
I hosted that one. Did we cover it last week, Miles?
Yeah.
Okay.
20...
No, I haven't heard the show yet. By the way, we're 2 weeks, 3 weeks behind on the podcast. But if you're hearing this, the podcast's up. Unless you're listening to it live. In which case, don't worry about it. You got a radio.
This is premium content here.
Go on. What do you
can't tell whether it's a laugh of frustration or a laugh that's maniacal. Like,
horrible pain. Like, multiple evenings, 3 hours clock.
Yeah, actually, we're charging for a podcast now, so you have to give us money to get to the podcast.
No, don't give me money. I'll have more guilt. You know, the thing, there is at least that. At least it's all volunteer. I don't have to feel like I'm not feeding my family. But, you know, I got to say, to decide in the middle of programming and launching a new website, to decide to switch your text editor to Vim is stupid. Just I want to make sure you understand that. I am so slow comparatively. I mean, sure, I can whip up the iPad and work for 4 minutes when, you know, before that.
Why did you do it?
Because I want to be able to program on the iPad. That's too cool.
But the whole thing.
Also, I want to be able to pair program with you. And TMUX is great for pair programming. You'll be
but
able to
I don't know Vim either.
I know.
So I'm not gonna learn Vim.
Oh, your week is gonna be hell next week.
No way.
It's okay.
I'm not doing it.
You can watch, and then I'll push the I key for you, and I can say, "Go ahead, type."
Okay.
The whole thing reminds me of people saying, "Oh, Dvorak keyboards are so much more efficient, so let's switch to those."
Oh, man.
That sounds good.
And if you don't know what a Dvorak keyboard is, don't worry about it. It's okay. You are not diminished as a human being at all.
If someone calls and asks us about keyboards, we'll talk all about it, but we're not going to unless we get a call. The phone number is 1-800-655-587. Again, it's 1-800-655-5877. And actually, we do have a call, but Ben, you
I got
to
finish my geek bit, which is a video just came back of the heat shield that dropped away from the rover actually hitting the ground on Mars. They managed to actually image the heat shield as it smashed
what'd they
into
image
Mars.
It with? One of the flying telescope things.
Yeah, it's
orbiting
so it's one of the blink and you'll miss it kind of things.
Yeah.
It's just like this little shadow, but then there's this little crater. You watch it one time, you don't see it. You watch it five times, you don't see it. And then they point to it with an arrow. It's just like 6 frames or 8 frames or something, and they just play it over and over again and point to it with an arrow, and you see it. And at the end, you're like, "Oh my god,
it's
so
like Wile
cool.
E. Coyote at the bottom of the canyon." Yeah. It's like.
even red. It's even red. Is it a color image or black and white?
It's a black and color image. It's like very, very desaturated,
right?
Kind of Mars-like Mars-y color, right? It's a Mars-y color.
Ooh, we've got color now. It's all red. Yeah,
it's so cool. And there's another one that came out of the rover going down on the sky crane.
Yeah,
and you can see the dust start to get kicked up.
Oh, that's awesome!
It's so cool. Anyway,
geek bits are things we suggest you go to our website to see.
Because
and since our website
yeah.
doesn't do that, don't worry about it. It's awesome.
Google it or go to the Bad Astronomy website. That Phil Plate is awesome. He's written a lot about it.
Yeah, go to your calendar and mark off like a month from now and everything will be there and everything will be,
you know what, though? For me to get NPR to scrape our podcast for all the post ones, I have to put them up daily. So it's going to be like a load of shows. I'll just drop in.
Yeah, but like think of like October, whatever the first show in October is. That's the official Geek Speak Day. That's our like
October,
our coming
October?
Out time. Yeah,
August. 2 months.
That's just mean.
Really?
I'm planning on putting at least the podcast file up today.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I don't want people to see like the hackneyed like
absolutely.
Stuff. We want to see like the finished, final, beautiful product.
Oh, it's gonna be so hackneyed for a while.
Hackneyed.
Hackneyed. Define. In a second, let me take a call first.
A horse or pony of light breed with a high stepping trot used in harness.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What?
Oh, never mind.
I thought it was two. Okay, so I can't say that I corrected Miles because we were both
later,
wrong.
Make commonplace by overuse.
Oh, to make commonplace by overuse. Hackneyed. E-Y-E-D.
What'd we say was hackneyed?
Lacking significance through having been overused, unoriginal, and trite. I just spelled it wrong.
Defined GeekSpeak. Let's go on.
Oh, God. Thanks.
Karine from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello. Welcome. Thanks for calling back. We've had you call before. Hi.
I have called before.
Yes.
I wanted to comment to you that one reason why Command V is paste is because Command P is print.
Oh, that's another good point.
Very good point.
And also, if you have a Windows keyboard, wireless keyboard connected to a Mac,
mm-hmm.
the button that brings up the start menu is the same as the Command button.
That's mm-hmm. right. If you do use a Windows keyboard on a Mac. Thank you. Those are great. And the reason why VI environment uses P is because you can't print from VI without tunneling stuff to
No, I have like kind of an existential question for you, which is if you couldn't use P because P was print, then why couldn't P have been paste and V is print?
Because
print because print starts
because
with a V.
Copy and pasting didn't exist until after printing existed. Printing was first.
Right, but if you remember before Windows came out, Control P wasn't necessarily print on many word processors. It was all random stuff. Like save and close on WordStar was Control KD.
I would say that X, C, and V being the cut, paste, or cut, copy, and paste has to do a lot with location as well.
Mm-hmm.
The X being cut makes sense.
They're all next to each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad that it's not like, option C is cut. And command key is paste or copy.
So if you have like command O, command P, or control O, control P, that means you're opening them, printing the document. They have the locality of
I like
file
that.
Operations.
Oh, that's great.
And then Q is way off on the side.
I hope you all have keyboards in front of you. Actually, no. I hope you've turned off your radio and just given up on us.
One thing that I don't understand is what is the purpose of Alt if you have what does Alt play? If you're connecting a Windows computer to a Mac,
Alt is
option on a Mac. Oh. And option is used on a Mac. You can do a great option 8 does a really cool little bullet if you want to use a bullet.
Mm-hmm. Keyboard mapping to
Ben, you're the Mac Unicode. Expert. What else does option
what
do?
Does,
but yeah, the keyboard mapping to other character sets or to Unicode character mm-hmm. sets, be able to do an acute accent on an E or
that's all option.
Or
that's
a
right.
circumflex on an I.
So a lot of times you'll have, for example, Command P will be print, but Command Option P will be some kind of print-like thing that's an alternate thing.
Ooh,
like, for
try.
Example, on Google Chrome, Command P is print. Command Option P is print using system dialog, right?
Right.
Command S is save. Command Option S
is save as.
Is that right?
I don't know.
No, it's
one thing that I know is that there's the shift and there's a little line above the shift and that there's a slash with a little line, which mm-hmm. means shift. If you, like, force quit is shift, command, shift. Command and then the power button on your computer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, options used for quite a few things. You know, as I remap keys to some degree sometimes when I'm doing repetitive tasks in certain applications, and I'll use option for that a lot. So if I'm in Photoshop and I want to desaturate a whole bunch of images and I'm doing it manually for some reason, I might assign a script in Photoshop to do that with me, and that's the kind of key I use. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of difficult.
I use it for just the extended character set. That's what I just use it for.
I use the option also and I move my windows around my screen with that key as well. Yeah. But I think we should probably move on to other topics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kareen, do you have any other questions for us?
Well, I was wondering on a Mac. I have a Mac, and I was wondering with the new operating system, there's the mission control.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set things on the four corners of the screen, and you can also set the keyboard buttons like F4, because I have a wireless keyboard where it's the F key, and then you hit function for it to be the
thing drawn
on the key. And so I was wondering if there's a way to set the mission control to a key on the F keys.
Key mapping is built in to some degree in OS X. I think there is a way to do that. But then again, the function keys are a little different.
Oh, Mac. F3 on the Mac keyboard,
right.
On the wireless keyboard, F3 is F3.
Yeah, right. So I've done a lot of looking into this, and mapping different things to the F keys, which by default you have to hold the function key and then hit the any of the buttons at the top in order to get the F1, F2, F3 functionality. That's really easy. But remapping the media keys, like, for example, the brightness or the expose or any of those things.
No, I'm not talking about remapping the media keys. I'm talking about I have a wireless keyboard.
No, we know what you're talking about, Ben.
Automatically the F keys and not
Kareen,
the media
Kareen,
keys.
Kareen, we hear you.
I want to make the
Ben.
F keys and the media keys the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, I guess the point I'm just trying to make is that it's generally when you're dealing with F keys or media keys, it can get very difficult and confusing on a Mac. And so the best way to handle it, at least in my opinion, has been to Google it and Google it and Google it until you figure out
And since you're calling in, I'll suggest a wonderful system preference tool for the Mac called Key Remapper for MacBook. So it's Key Remap for MacBook. And then they also have a PC keyboard hack, which allows you to assign PC keys as well. I use those. But as Alex says, and thank you, Kareen, for the call, do look up Key Remap for MacBook or for whatever machine you have. Alex suggests if you do keyboard remapping a lot, as you change computers, it becomes a serious problem.
It does. It definitely does.
Because it's not set up for you that way. Let's go ahead and take a call from, I guess we will talk to, Marilyn from Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Mm-hmm. Two really almost Luddite-level questions, and I apologize if you've addressed these before, but one is, what can you do if your email has been hijacked and people are sending out tons of sales ads and things under your email? And two, are there plans for the iPad to come out with a phone in it?
I'll say to address number one, change your password immediately, and also change any passwords of services that might have gotten password reset messages back to that email address. Because you don't want some kind of hacker getting access to your email address and then going to Twitter and asking to reset your password and, you know, getting a password reset to the email they have access to, things like that. So it's a little bit difficult when your email gets compromised. It's up to you kind of how
much detail. And that's assuming the email was compromised. It may be a friend of yours that got hacked, and what it'll do is it'll take someone from their list of contacts and use that as the from address.
Yeah, they can spoof emails. So if your email is compromised, then, you know, option one. But if your email has not been compromised, it might just be a spoofing thing, and there's not too much you can do about that.
Did that make perfect sense, Marilyn, or should I translate for you?
Okay.
Let me translate for you. It's basically that anybody can send email as you. They can just say your from address is your from address. That's actually supported. And depending on what server sends the mail, that's stopped or not stopped. Now, are you at Yahoo or Gmail or some other company?
No, I'm at SBC Global.
SBC Global. Okay. So,
well, I guess that's Yahoo.
Yeah. So SBC Global, which is a really big provider here, if you're in their network and you try to send mail as you, there's no authentication or anything necessary. Anybody can do that. The from address can be you. So that's kind of an irritant, but it means that somebody else has an infected machine and they're sending out spam. They can use your from address, and there's nothing you can do about it, unfortunately. I would recommend, right now, you have an email address that's connected to who you get your internet from. And I tend to shy away from that. And the reason is that if you want to change your who you get your internet from to some other company like AT&T or Cruise.io or something like that, you lose your email address. And that process is really complicated. So since you're having trouble with your email, go ahead and make a switch. Go ahead and pick a good internet service provider that offers free email, Yahoo, Google, I don't know, there's probably tons of others, and make a new email address and send out that and start sending mail from that, move your address book over to that system, and over time, your friends will learn your new email address, and then you can get rid of the SBC Global. Additionally,
and reprint business cards.
That is the problem. It's a long commitment. But keep in mind that right now, your business card traps you to a certain service that costs you money that might not be the ideal service for internet for you. And you're going to have to keep paying for it even though you don't need it potentially. So you're in a trap situation. Now, what I would suggest if you're a professional and you have business cards is you should probably have your own domain name and use your email through that. But again, you mentioned in the beginning you're a Luddite and that's complicated sometimes. There are some really simple services to do this and I don't have any off the top of my head.
Yeah, I was actually thinking I registered a domain name and then set up Gmail to work off of that domain.
Yeah.
And it's not terribly difficult. You would want to get someone to help you out, but it's really simpler than you would think it would be.
Right. And you know what you could do if you wanted to, do it with a geek, and a geek could do it probably for you for free, though they might charge you to do it. And it's only a slight fee to have your own domain name. And then you could go to some company like...
Are you guys allowed to make recommendations for...
Absolutely.
Places?
Yeah, we are. So it's just our opinion. It's not KOSPs or anything, but we have great opinions. We have
I
lots
like
of opinions.
Opinion.
So I currently use for my web hosting, my domain name management and everything, I used a company called DreamHost. Now, I actually, for the geeks, I register my domain somewhere else. It's a different company. I use multiples of those. And then I use DreamHost for my serving. But one of the things you could do is you could go to DreamHost right now, DreamHost.com. And sign up for an account and find a domain name and buy it. And then when you're sitting at the domain name, it's a little complicated, but the instructions are all there. You can say, use Google for my hosting. And then you'll have your domain name using Gmail as your mail client, which is awesome. And on top of that...
I meant more, are there local geeks that you can recommend to go to for help?
Ben used to do this.
I used to, yeah. Not enough time in the day.
Yes, I do have one. If you send me an email, I will forward you off my list of two geeks that are in the area that will help you out. My email address is lyle@geekspeak.org. Thank you, Marilyn, for the call.
Okay, the iPad and the iPhone?
Oh, the iPad and the iPad. No, there won't be a phone inside the iPad. But...
As far as we know.
But you can do phone through the iPad.
Right.
Miles?
Yeah, let's say you can do VoIP over an iPad.
Voice over internet. Internet IP. So we're talking about something like Skype or like Google Talk. You can actually have a phone.
Not Google Talk.
Google Voice.
But,
sorry.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Do they have a client?
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Sorry. Thanks for the call. Bye.
Yeah. We definitely been rolling off the rails on this show, just like going off in our own little geek land. And
la-di-da.
I love it. All right. Let's go ahead and go to Monterey. Sarah, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. Thank you. I just have one more input on the editing question. That is the use of the V and the Alt keys and all of that. You all are just a little bit too current. You need to think about old editing marks. The V is the response to the editing mark that is above the number C or the number 6 on your keyboard, which is an indication that you have omitted something. And when your editor gives you that, that means you've left something out. And then you, in turn, use the V to show what you want to insert.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Mm. Okay, so the notation when you're getting edited on paper is to say you've left something, you put a little a V
caret.
Above it. A caret is another way we call it. And that says you have to insert something here. And so you're talking about
right.
the insert. So you're thinking the reason why V is our paste command is because that's kind of... to denote that you were going to insert something at that location. I like it. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's how history formed the V into our standard paste, but I think it's a good guess. I like it.
Hey, it's probably a lot better than attitude. The actual.
Yeah. What'd you say? I'm sorry. Okay. Sarah, what'd you say?
Well, I said for someone who still does a lot of manual editing, I use those too. So much. And
yeah.
It's like, I couldn't believe that you guys didn't know that. But
the thing is, I don't think of the mark to insert, and I do editing sometimes for people. I didn't think of that mark, which I do use, as a V.
Uh-huh.
So that was the problem my brain was having. I think of the V as something very different.
Yeah. And in addition to that,
but even though it's the same character, it looks the same.
But a letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the points behind this show is that we're bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Geeks will make decisions that make no sense for what seem arbitrary reasons to the rest of the public. So it being a logical answer, like what you're describing, makes it inversely proportional to its likelihood of why it happened.
Then again, Sarah clearly is an editing geek. Right, she knows her editing really well, so it might have come from that space. I mean, the first word processors were used by editors.
That's right.
Thank you, Marilyn, for your call. Oh, thank you, Sarah, for the call. Thank you, Sarah, very much. Bye bye.
So I've been Googling during that call, trying to figure out if there is an accepted answer, and the only thing
truth?
I could find you're right. The only I just want something verifiable, but the only thing I could find is Yahoo Answers, which of course are. well known for citing their sources. No, not at all.
It's as good as GeekSpeak.
They're right.
From Capitola, Ian, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
So I have a question about the spell checker in Microsoft Outlook.
Okay.
I have a couple of words that I've either inadvertently added to the dictionary, but they're wrongly spelled.
Oh, isn't that frustrating?
And how do you undo those? I've tried everything to get to the dictionary and remove those words.
Okay, it's a long way away. I'm going to hint to you a little bit of how to do it. It's under Tools. It's under Options. It's then under Spelling and Grammar tab. Then there's a Dictionaries button, and then you have to select the custom DIC or dictionary file, and you can edit that.
Well,
and that's one version of Outlook.
Options. Mail format or mail.
Oh, but
editor options, then proofing, or the section proofing, then custom dictionary, and then edit wordless.
So I'm not going to give my own version
because
what's just happened is all of us Googled it at the same time and we all got different answers. So I would Google something like remove words, spell check Outlook, and you know, look at the different options, see which one works for
you're,
you.
You're going to try it, and all these are going to say the same thing. You're going to try to edit the custom DIC file.
Yeah.
And then you can
change the Google search I looked for was editing Outlook dictionary,
right.
And it came up with...
What's my phrase? Mine was Outlook spell checker remove word. Cool.
We had the same words in our query.
We did? That's awesome.
And we came up with the same result.
Thank you so much for the call.
Okay. But of course, mine was the correct answer, and so my query was
bad. I don't think that's necessarily true. Hey, GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by the National Steinbeck Center, hosting Banned and Recovered, a multimedia art exhibition about the changed world of post 9/11 and the passing of the Patriot Act and its effects on our First Amendment rights. Open through September 14th. More information is at steinbeck.org. We're also supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and Small Business Tech specializes in protecting data and in providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. That's at hasbtech.com. Again, that's hasbtech.com. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. GeekSpeak's a registered service mark of David Lawrence, and we appreciate its use. In the air with me today was Mr. Ben Jaffe. He's a media guy extraordinaire, traveler, world traveler, and a teacher. Thank you, Ben, for being here.
Thank you.
We also have Miles Elam, programmer, political junkie, good guy, and thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure.
And me, I'm Lyle Troxell. I'm desperately trying to get the GeekSpeak website up and running so our podcast feed goes again. So for those people that hear this three shows later,